kind, gentle creatures that can only hurt one another by accident. He says, then there are wolves. The wolves will feed on the sheep. They're the sociopaths. They're the criminals. He says, and then there are sheepdogs. The sheep are a little leery of the sheepdog. He wanders around, checks the perimeter every night, and barks at the moon. He would never turn his teeth on the flock, but he yearns for a righteous battle. When the wolf comes around, nothing else will do, and the entire flock is sitting there trying to hide behind one lonely sheepdog as he faces down the wolves. We're talking about a creature who is capable of confronting and dealing with combat and sustaining themselves across the long haul. The goal becomes to be a sheepdog, to be a warrior, to be the one that is ready to respond to the threats when the time arises.
Welcome to Blue Justice. This is your host, Amanda, and we have a lot to talk about today. So I'm going to kick it off pretty quick. We have Tammy on the phone and David S., pretty loyal callers. Thank you guys very much.
Good morning.
I'm going to start off by reading this thing that one of our members wrote. Tammy asked me to do this, and I think it's a really good idea. And then we have a lot to talk about. I think we're going to have some pretty good dialogue today. So let me kick this off because I do think for the supporter side of the group, it's very important to do this. It was written by our member, Ricky Miller, and he said he wrote it a couple of years ago. It's really good. It's called Being a Cop. And it says, this coming February will mark my 21st year as a police officer. Over the years, I've had some interesting experiences. Some good, some bad, but overall I have to say the good has outweighed the bad by far. When I first started, people didn't think I was old enough to be a cop, but I don't have that problem now. The job has definitely aged me. The stress, the lack of sleep, the shift work, the constant adrenaline dumps, working countless side jobs to make extra money to survive, it all takes a toll on you. I started out as a young, motivated, hell-on-wheels cop that was ready to change the world. Years later, I realized that while you can certainly make differences in some people's lives, you cannot change the world. Some people are incapable of changing. All you can do is hold the line and wait for the new generation of coppers to join the fight. Those rookies who are idealistic and who still believe they can change the world. The job needs that. It's the never-ending cycle. Have I become jaded? Sure. It's not hard to be when you've seen humanity at its worst. I've seen brother stab brother over a turkey leg at Thanksgiving. I've seen father shoot son over changing the channel during a football game. I've seen a 15-year-old face down in a field with a butcher knife buried in his kidney. I've seen double homicides, triple homicides, and even quadruple homicides. I've had to watch as the driver of a car burned alive after it struck a tree because it was impossible to get him out. I've held children when they cry because they realize a parent has been killed. I've held children while they cry as one or both parents are taken to jail. I've cried with them. I've cried alone. I've cried with fellow officers. I've cried at funerals. I've shed a tear when fellow officers were killed or murdered. I've had to respond to a traffic fatality where the driver was killed and it was a good friend of mine. I've fought suspects, been punched, kicked, scratched, spit on. I've had a knife pulled on me. I've fought suspects to gain control over a gun, and I've fought over my own gun. I've been smashed in the head with a beer bottle. I've broken bones. I've had my nose broken. I've been sued several times. I've had to wrestle a suicidal guy down an interstate, off an interstate overpass, all while hoping I don't fall over the side. I've worked in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. I saw humanity at its lowest. I worked in New York after 9/11 and smelt the burning bodies in the rubble. But as I look back over the last 20 years, I realize I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. If not me, then who? My father tried to steer me away from being a cop. Of course I didn't listen. Having a cop for a father was both a blessing and a curse. Sure, I wanted to live up to his legacy, all the while trying to break free from it. I needed to show that I was capable of being a good cop. After years on the job, I began to realize why he tried to steer me away from it. I began looking for the bad in people instead of the good. I realized that you're not part of the job, it's part of you, 24/7. I realized the burden of carrying a gun 24 hours a day. When your wife is trying to figure out what outfit to wear to dinner, I'm trying to figure out which gun will be concealed by my outfit best. I realize that schools, shopping malls, theaters, restaurants are not safe. I began to despise crowds, unless it was a crowd of cops. I didn't like going places because my head was always on a swivel, wondering if the bulge in the person's pocket was a gun. I realized that it was hard not to have normal conversations with people who were not cops. People generally don't talk about blood, guts, and gore over dinner. When being introduced to new people, it always comes with the suffix, he's a cop. I listen to people say, man, y'all need to get paid more for what y'all do, but they're the first to bitch about the cop giving them a ticket they, quote, didn't deserve. Most people don't have a lot of use for cops until they really need them. Then, we're never around when you need them. Yeah, you're right. We can't be on every street corner. We are probably responding to a caller who wants to complain that their trash can was knocked over or the newspaper man threw their newspaper in the ditch. Or maybe we're busy dealing with a juvenile who won't go to school and the mom doesn't know what to do. Sometimes it seems as if the job is a no-win situation. We patrol the bad areas of town and we hear, why are you not messing with the rich folks? We patrol the affluent areas of town and we hear, shouldn't y'all be out catching criminals? We use force and we hear, couldn't y'all have used less force? I sure wish someone would tell me how much force is less force. We hit a suspect with a nightstick and hear, you have tasers. Couldn't you have tased him? We tase a suspect and we hear, you should have pepper sprayed him. Despite all of that, we still go to work. We live for that one crucial moment when everyone is running from evil and we run towards it. When something bad happens, most people say, I'm glad I wasn't there. The cops say, I wish I had been there. The typical stereotype of a cop is that they are corrupt or fat or lazy or dumb. Nothing could be further from the truth. The cops that I work with and have met from across the world are the most dedicated, righteous cops you could ask for. In spite of everything we go through, we go to work every day hoping that today is the day we meet the bad guy who is trying to harm you and defeat him. Are cops in it for the money? Hell no. It's the adrenaline rush. It's the feeling you get when you save a life. And it's the satisfaction of taking the predator off the street. It's knowing that you made a difference in someone's life. But above all, cops do the job because of the thing to do. It's been said that we have ringside tickets to the greatest show on earth, and that absolutely is the truth. There is no better job. David, take it from here for 1 second. I got to deal with the kid.
So far, all those words hold and ring true. They bring back a lot of memories to me, myself personally, and you know, to some degree, it's heartbreaking that our attitudes from being on the job for so long change. It hardens us, but we still have a heart. We do. We really do. We still believe in humanity. If we didn't, we probably would have gave up a long time ago. Try and hold to a higher standard. Sometimes we fail. Sometimes we persevere. But always remember that what this gentleman is writing is absolutely 100% unequivocally true. And he couldn't have stated it better. That's very heartfelt. And thanks for writing that. I have a really big appreciation for that and what you've stated. Remember, people, you know, your police officer's there to help you in any and all situations. Sometimes they may not be able to get involved because, well, there might be legalities involved where it's not criminal, but they will try and help regardless. I've never seen a police officer turn his back on somebody. Remember, they're your friends. They really are. They're not your enemy. We're not the enemy. Never were, never will be. Contrary to popular belief from some factions out there, we're here to help. You can either accept it, deny it, it's your choice. But in the end result, at some point in time in your life, you're going to have contact with us, and I always hope that it's a positive outcome for you. Not so positive for all, but hey, just the same. But let's
so
remember.
On that,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That was an emotional piece. It's kind of hit me. Go ahead.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good idea for Tammy to ask me to read that because it was, when I read it, it was great. And he said he wrote it a couple of years ago. He shared it to the group, and I appreciated reading it myself. You know, we ask a lot of times for listeners, if they have cop stories, to call in our officer side, especially if they have funny stories, heart-wrenching stories, you know, any kind of story they want to share and can remain anonymous. We would love to hear that. We appreciate hearing the things that they have to say. And I would love to do, if we could get enough people, I would absolutely love to do just a funny cop story day where we have several different cops call in and just tell the funny things that they've seen and the funny things that have happened to them, a positive, you know, a positive side of these officers. I have to go back on the, I was telling my husband about it last night, the Copy for Cops yesterday was just the funniest thing I've ever seen. We're trying to find a parking space because the McDonald's was packed, and there's these cops standing outside with a sign that says free hugs. And, you know, Tammy and I got a pretty good kick out of it. But then I think I rolled my window down so she could take a picture or something, and or maybe they flagged me to roll my window down. I don't know, but I rolled it down, and they're yelling at me, "Hey, we need a hug!" It was awesome. Those kind of things are fun. I love that they do these things. It was just, it's hilarious. And the mascot, my son, was just absolutely obsessed with this one police officer. He just loved him. Every time he'd see him, he just took off. He ran through the crowd to run to this one police officer and give him a hug. And it was cool. It made my day. Okay, let's get on to topic because we've got a ton to cover. I don't even know where to start. I have several, and I have one more. Yeah, you go ahead.
The reason why I'm trying to bring this up now is I don't want to run out of time. This is time sensitive. If you go on our main page or our public page, Lesma's page, they shared a story that somebody had sent to the page on the show Blackish. There's season 2, episode 16, Hope. It's airing tonight, 8:30 Central Time on ABC. The episode is supposed to talk about injustice and police brutality to do with African American children, and it shows in the preview that's on the page, it shows the controversy in the family on what to tell their own children in this situation. And you know, the family is talking about how this could be our children and what to tell their own children, and it should be really interesting to see what they tell their kids in that video, because it directly focuses on police brutality.
And it uses the protests and the riots. That's what starts the dialogue from the preview, the trailer. David, I put that trailer in the chat so you can look at it if you want. But what starts this dialogue in the first place is there's protests and riots in the street, and there's these two, you know, the adults are watching it, and then there's two children standing behind, and they say, don't we get to know what's going on? And I think that this is, that right there points to the root of a lot of our problems, and it is in what you teach your children. So with going on what you said, Tammy, it'll be interesting to see what they say. 100% it will be interesting, because a lot of these children are raised that whites are racist, or police hate them, police are coming after you, police are not the good guys, and so they're raised with this inherent belief of that, or that police officers are racist, that they're oppressed. They're raised with this inherent belief, and I think that a lot of these problems start with what you teach your children. And this is with any generation of children across the board, every child growing up. I mean, you do have, you know, your KKK members who raise their children saying that other races are bad. It's just as bad. This is the inherent problem that needs to be addressed immediately, and I'm really intrigued to see what happens here. It shows a little bit later in the clip, it shows I'm assuming the mother and father arguing, And she said, what am I supposed to tell my children? And he says, they have a right to know the truth. They need to know, I quoted this, I wrote it down, they need to know the world they are living in.
Mm-hmm.
What is the world they are living in? Go ahead.
Well, there's another program that's going to air as well. And I don't know, it's called Chicago PD. They're going to be airing an episode here tonight, or I think it's Thursday night, I'm sorry. And it's going to be involving the topic of the BLM and a police officer involved shooting. So it's going to be interesting to see how they portray this.
When is that airing? Do you know?
I believe it's Thursday night is when Chicago PD airs. It comes on at 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. North, I think, Eastern Time. But it's going to be very interesting how they portray it. They've been giving it a lot of airtime commercially, really pushing this because they're trying to show that the police department is not the enemy. So that's a positive spin. I was hoping that, you know, I was hoping to see that they wouldn't try and turn this around and make, you know, an episode to where we've got to sit there and try and fight for, you know, the police officers being unjustly stereotyped again.
Right.
But it so far from what I'm seeing in the clips, it should take a positive in law enforcement's favor.
You know, it's about time because you've got this Black-ish episode airing tonight, and we don't know where it's going to go, but we do know exactly what it focuses on, exactly what the whole idea, and it's actually an extended episode. So this will be interesting. Let's hope that it's covered properly. We only have one way to find out because right now we just have a trailer. But let's go back to just a few months ago. Law and Order, and I don't remember if it was like, I think it was just regular Law and Order. I don't think it was like an SVU or something like that. I think it was just Law and Order. They did the same thing. They had an officer-involved shooting, killing an unarmed Black man, and the trailer for it was just, you know, they had the BLM protest in it. They had, he was unarmed, da-da-da-da-da-da, but here's where it really... I really had an issue with it. It was so what happened was they did shoot this unarmed kid who was reaching for his waistband. But at the end of the episode, basically what they focused the episode on was the officers covering for each other. All of the officers told the same story except one. All of the officers emptied their gun. We're close to, you know, fired multiple shots, except one officer who had only fired 3 shots, and they focused on this.
Speaking of, yes. That was actually Law and Order SVU.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so, because Mariska Hargitay was in it, but I can't remember it being an SVU, so yeah. But, yeah, and they kept grilling this cop, why did you only fire 3 shots, and they were indicating that, you know, it didn't actually come out and say it during the episode, that this cop knew the kid wasn't a threat. He fired because the other cops were firing, and then he caught himself and stopped. And they focused on that all of these officers had told the same story, that they were in fear for their lives and they were protecting each other. For that one episode to be focused on that one cop, that's really the rhetoric that's the problem. We can take all of these individual shootings and break them down that happened, that the BLM is jumping on. We can take them and break them down by protocol, and you see, like Darren Wilson, why they're not charged, why they don't go to jail, why they, you know, are cleared of wrongdoing. You can actually break them down and see, and any rational person could. But then you've got all of a sudden when this starts coming out that these officers are being cleared and they're justified in what they have done, then you've got your people coming in with the rhetoric, well, they're just covering for each other. They're just, they investigate their own. They're covering for their own. And that's the real problem. And it's not the real problem. These people don't even understand how the process works. So for that SVU episode to be focused on that rhetoric it's really damaging. I think it's really, really damning. It spreads the hate even further.
Oh,
and
I agree with you totally. I mean, let's remember, you know, Hollywood's making these shows and they're looking for ratings, okay, however they get them. And they are taking now, they're starting to tap the topics that are in our daily news now. And you'll see if you watch a lot of these programs, they say it doesn't depict any true life story. But when you look at the story itself and, you know, how it's portrayed, it really does, because they've taken the information from a real-life situation. They may not mention these people by name, but if you look at it and you dissect it, they've actually emulated the entire situation that took place just so they can make their show. And they take a very negative and disrespectful spin on it in my eyes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that spin reaches how many people? I mean, Law and Order is huge. I hadn't even heard of the show Black-ish, but I don't watch television at all. I mean, anybody who knows me, I do not have time for television. I DVR stuff sometimes and I'll catch up, but I mean, it's very rare. So I've never seen a commercial for Chicago PD. I've never heard of this Black-ish show. I think when I turned on that Law and Order episode, I had been told ahead of time, and it was the first time I turned on the television in a month. I don't have time for television. But how many people, I'm very much in the minority. How many people do you reach with one of these primetime episodes like this? It's got to be in the millions.
Absolutely. You're talking millions.
And we're talking impressionable minds. We're talking people who get their information from the television set. And, of course, they're going to put, like the SVU episode, they're going to, in their minds, know exactly what that's in reference to. Of course, in this Black-ish episode with all the protesters and riots and, you know, they deserve to know what kind of world we're living in speeches, that, of course, they're going to put this together as, in their minds, put it with what's going on with current events. And it's dangerous. It's very dangerous because, I mean, again, we don't know what Black-ish is going to do, but, I mean, if they address this problem properly, then it would be amazing if they actually cover this. It would be great to see, especially the way that the episode looks. It looks like it's going to be spun negatively, but what better way to get millions of people watching tonight and then to say the officers didn't do anything wrong, police, and maybe watch these parents having a talk with their children that police are not inherently racist, that police do not go out looking to shoot people every day. That would be brilliant. Is that wishful thinking? Maybe. We'll see. There's only one way to find out. We really don't know what's going to happen tonight. It's definitely a teaser trailer. Definitely. But let's hope that they do the right thing. And then if they don't, let's hope that this Chicago PD episode counters it very well. It would be awesome to see both perspectives of a story aired in the same week.
I followed both closely, yeah, only because their storylines are so close to the reality of everything. That's what intrigues people, because, and they get the viewing public, because they promote their shows in such a way that it is so close to reality and what's going on in our society that they get the viewers. So how it's portrayed, and, you know, it's going to spin at least, you know, either negative or positive. And so far, like I said, what I've seen so far in some of these trailers, they come out with, like, Chicago PD with the BLM. They come in very hard and strong, but you also see the police coming back, you know, also making a statement publicly, we are not the enemy. You know, they're pushing that. We are not the enemy. So that's a positive thing.
Yes. Yes.
We're definitely going to have to keep an eye on it, though. Because
yes, I want...
There will be backlash either way. Either way. I mean, if they, say that the people were the problem, then you know that they're going to get some backlash. Yes. Especially with what's going on today, there's going to be backlash either way.
Either way, you're right. You're right.
And this is, you know, I heard about this show before this episode pretty recently. You know, they were saying that it's a pretty popular show. The main actress is the daughter of Diana Ross. The husband that plays the main character, he is a well-known actor in movies. So I think that they do get quite a few views. It is still, you know, they've been around since 2014, so I don't know. I tried looking up the following on that, but either way, just because it is on ABC, I mean, that's a lot of the popular shows that you watch are on ABC, so we'll have to watch for that.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, I do agree 100%. You're going to have backlash if it's spun positively in a neutral type light. You're going to have backlash from, like, the Black Lives Matter crowd, the noisy ones that believe otherwise. And if it is spun negatively, you're going to have backlash from the pro-police crowd because we know the whole story. We see what's going on. There's more than one perspective to this, and we're talking about two groups of people that are becoming very polarized, very polarized. It's where, you know, Beyonce had a very large contribution to that. You're beginning to see, and it's been going on for a long time, but you're beginning to see your groups even further, you know, and that's because Hollywood, the media, your schools, we're fixing to go on that, your schools are causing this division to be so deep. It's sad. It's really sad. So yeah, you definitely, you've got two groups of people that are very much on the defense, very much on the defense. Your Black Lives Matter crowd, I think, are kind of starting to lose ground a little bit. They're starting, the public is starting to stand up and say, this is enough, enough.
Well, they just had a situation with, and, you know, I'm glad it happened to Bernie Sanders, but the BLM interrupted Bernie Sanders' his latest rally. They took over his microphone. They actually
they've done that too.
In the podium and, you know, started with their rhetoric. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And the thing is, nobody removed them from that podium. They let this woman speak.
Yeah. And they've done that to several politicians. Several politicians. It's actually brought up, they actually asked Donald Trump what would happen if that happened at one of his rallies. And I can't remember the response. It's been a little while, but they've been making a habit out of this because they're I think, in my opinion, they're losing ground. And so now they're trying to find even more radical ways to reach a public, to reach the, to get a microphone.
I mean, under normal circumstances, considering, you know, the blatant disregard for, you know, what he would, I mean, like I said, again, I'm not a Bernie Sanders fan, but even still, he has the right to, you know, he's having a, you know, a speak-out session, you know, trying to get his votes, and he's ultimately paying for that. And here comes somebody that just interrupts everything that he's doing and takes over his situation. By any account, I mean, that's you should be arrested. That woman should have been arrested and charged. Why they didn't press it is beyond me. But, you know,
well, because it's intimidation. That's their tactics is intimidation. That's exactly what these people are doing to gain their publicity, to gain their, you know, and who wouldn't be, in generally speaking, who wouldn't be intimidated by a group that prides themselves on having burnt down two cities?
Well,
you know,
another,
that is intimidation.
I mean, I'm looking at, too, on a flip side of that coin, you know, our other you know, Democrats and certain individuals within the Republican parties too, they're looking to sway and get that black vote. And if they want to let themselves be interrupted purposely by these groups, they're going to let them, because they think that by letting them and standing, you know, side by side with it, they're going to get the black vote by doing that.
Well, and that's exactly. And you see your media, your anchors and stuff that are actually, you know, saying this. They actually are coming out, and they're like, well, they're trying to get the minority vote. How can they get the minority vote? When they Marco Rubio is a prime example of this. Prime example. So around this time that these things were happening, Marco Rubio was asked the same question about Black Lives Matter, because they were interjecting themselves into politics, into these town halls and things like that. And Marco Rubio said, Black Lives Matter is a legitimate cause. And my jaw hit the floor. Do what?
I mean, he's saying it's a legitimate cause. By whose standards?
According to him, because he's a minority and he knows what it's like to be stopped by police. And then he also tells the story, and he just came out and did it again very recently, but this was months ago as well when he first did it. He comes out and he tells the story. He's like, they're legitimate. I have a friend that's been stopped by police 9 times, you know, and, you know, after the 9th time of being stopped by officers, you're going to think, yeah, there might be some truth to this profiling or this racism, or, you know, and Marco Rubio he's pandering again. And you'll see your news anchors say this. You will see your news anchors come out. They do it all the time. And they're like, they've got to get the minority vote. They've got to get the minority vote. And what better way to do it than say, hey, you have a legitimate cause or you have a legitimate complaint. I even know people who feel the way you do because whatever, whatever. And instead of addressing the issue, this is the problem with politicians, and I can't get started on this or we'll be spending the rest of the show doing it, but the problem with politicians is that they tell you what you want to hear
to get
your vote, because then they have free reign for that 4 years, that 2 years, whatever their term is. They have free reign, and that is a problem. And the real problem is that we even elect these asshats, honestly, who say one thing, act another way, and then to turn around and you have a voting public who says, oh, I like what he's saying. I don't care what he's done in the past. I don't care what his background is. I don't care, you know, whatever, whatever. He's saying right now to me right now that my cause is legitimate. He's got my vote. And that's all they care about, and that's all they focus on. So honestly, it's our fault. I've talked a million times about Nancy Pelosi. That woman holds an elected position. That blows my mind. That woman to me is like on some kind of serious drugs. And she holds an elected position, which means the voting public cast their vote. You can't – oh, I told you can't get me started on this. Okay, let's get off from it, because seriously, I'll do it all day. The next thing I want to cover is in Kentucky. Have you guys seen this one, the high school English class that has the pictures hanging up?
Yes, this is an Action Post, right?
Yes, this is an Action Post from Lesma, and we have 2 Action Posts up currently. It says
in 2015 comparison.
Yes. Yes, 1930, it shows a Klan member over a Confederate flag pointing a gun at an African-American. And then it says it's cut in half. Then the other half is 2015. It has a police officer pointing a gun at, which this is my observation of the drawing, an African-American child who it looks to me like is offering the officer a Skittles. He's handing the officer something, and the officer's got a gun pointed at the kid's head. And he's definitely a child in this picture compared to the other half of the picture, which is a grown adult man. And he's definitely wearing a hoodie, and he's definitely offering something. And this is over the American flag. A couple of things I want to bring up before I have you guys bouncing on this, but I'm assuming that this is a reference to Trayvon Martin. again, because he's handing the officer something that looks like Skittles, or it's a square, and he's wearing a hoodie. Trayvon Martin was not shot by a police officer, number one. So that in and of itself is very disturbing. The fact that this is a child in this picture, a much smaller person, is disturbing. But the most disturbing is that it is a uniformed police officer pointing his gun at anyone who in their depiction is offering the cop something, trying to hand the officer something. It's pretty disgusting. A couple of facts about this again, and then I'm going to let you guys take off with it for a second. This drawing is hanging up in a classroom, in a high school classroom in Kentucky. I don't know what the assignment was, but I was reading the description of it, and this was a drawing from one of last year's students. And the teacher liked it so much, she saved it, and she hung it up in her classroom again this year.
Yeah, she's promoting hatred.
Absolutely. And they're saying that this is her freedom of speech. The courts have ruled freedom of speech in the classroom. Can I walk into a classroom and drop some F-bombs? No, I cannot. As a teacher, can you do that? No, you cannot. Because the courts have ruled that freedom of speech is relevant.
Consequences for whatever you say. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Take off with it for a second.
I mean, you know, subsequently, by doing this, all this teacher is doing, and from what this picture depicts, is the depiction in the picture is that they're showing how their take on it, how racism has changed. It went from just being, as they refer to it, as whitey in a hood. Now it's just police officers against, I mean, they've spun this around so bad.
Damon.
And to promote hatred for police departments and police officers as a whole by keeping that up. You're not teaching children anything positive by doing that. You're actually setting them up for failure. And that teacher ought to be held accountable for that. And the school should be held accountable as well, because for allowing that to take place, the school grounds are to remain a neutral place. I mean, come on, for crying out loud. You have these schools are having a problem with just saying the Pledge of Allegiance with the statement of under God. I mean, come on, they want to remove that. That's part of the Pledge of Allegiance. Come on. You don't like it, then leave the room. But that's part of it. We've been doing it for years. Why are you going to? Go ahead.
I was just going to say that in my experience, you know, I grew up with a neighbor that was Jehovah's Witness, and she would stand up and she just wouldn't do the pledge. She was just respectful about it. You know, she didn't lash out and tell everybody, no, I'm not doing it. And I mean, there's no reason to like tell everybody else they can't do it just because you don't want to. I don't get that. But I was going to tell you, as far as the teacher's comment on it, I wrote this down. She said that picture showed the evolution of racial violence, and the school believes that it's educationally noteworthy.
And they're absolutely 100% wrong.
Yeah, evolution of racial violence.
Yes, that's exactly what this is trying to portray, but that is promoting the idea that police are racist.
Exactly.
And
they're
comparing,
you know,
a police officer to a Klansman, and that just really pisses me off. That just really, really pisses me off.
You know, and here's the thing. People were saying, you know, let's put an end to racism. Well, first off, stop teaching it. Stop teaching racism. That's something that's taught. That's not something that is inbred in you when you're born. When you're born, you come into this world, everybody to you is the same. You have no idea the difference between this, that, and the other. You're taught to be a racist. That is something that is taught to you. And for the schools to sit there and say, well, we're trying to stop racism, well, then stop teaching racism. Stop teaching it. That's what you're ultimately doing. You're embedding it into our youth of today so that they grow up to be racist. That's what you're doing. And you're making it hard for the police officers, too, on top of it, to do their job. Because everything that they do is going to be a racist move. They do their job. It's not. They don't do it based on race. You break the law, you break the law. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, yellow, green, purple. Whoever they catch doing it, that's the person who stands, you know, they have to atone for their sins, so to speak. So, come on, let's get off the race card here. I really don't give a goddamn what happened 300 years ago. It had nothing to do with me. I had no part of it. Move on. Get over your butt hurt.
Yeah,
ahead,
I mean, anymore you have you have mixed races, you know, I know how light-skinned I am, but my grandmother's from Mexico. I just happen to have a Danish dad, you know, so I got the blonde hair, you know, so it's just,
I think
like,
the. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say that we're. And my husband, you know, he's actually, been told that he was racist too, but he was. This was somebody in Arkansas. Someone said, "I bet you're racist," you know, like commenting to him, even though he himself is actually partially African American. And then he was told he was too dark to go to certain parts of Arkansas, that they would be discriminating against him too, well, racist against him. You know, you have it. It's just silly to me. I think for me, when being in California, you had a mix of everybody, it just seemed weird to step into racism again. And it's weird to me to see it, you know, that it's a problem in some places that people still make a big deal out of it. You know, I don't have experience with it. Not to say that it doesn't exist, because clearly it does exist in some places. We see it. And it, a lot of that goes back into the raising, which, you know, when you
exactly.
have teachers that hang this in their class.
Yes, they're contributing in a major way. In a major way contributing to, again, the raising and the impressionable children that you are. This woman educates children, and this is her second class to impress this upon,
mm-hmm.
which makes you wonder what she's saying in the classroom in general. How does she explain this to the children? How does she even try to justify this? Now, they are high school children. In this classroom, they're high school children.
Oh,
which,
wow.
To me, what kind of reaction, I wonder, if one of these students was vocal enough and thinks for themselves enough to, as like this one, the child of a police officer or a first responder who put this out, what would happen, I wonder, if she challenged the teacher on this? You guys have any thoughts on that? I wonder what would happen. Because all it takes is for one child to have that courage to say something about it. And then, but they're impressionable children. That's the problem. Even student were to stand up, I don't know.
This young,
go ahead.
This teacher that's allowing this and saving this and promoting it in a negative fashion. Something tells me a little bit about her, and usually my gut feeling isn't wrong. She probably very well had a child that drew that, and that was their feeling on it and their spin on it. But instead of maybe having a positive discussion with this child, saying, no, that's really not the way life is, they are not out to hurt you. I think if you would dig into that teacher's background somewhere, I guarantee it, she had a run-in with law enforcement, and she's got a bitter taste in her mouth. And she was wrong, and she got told, and she got, you know, she's butthurt over it.
Well, let's let's go with not even that. Let's not necessarily on that, because you've got all of these, we'll say high school kids, we'll say young adults, you know, your Black Lives Matter movements, your, you know, those people. How many of them have honestly had a bad run-in with police officers? And compared to how many of them have just been influenced by their parents telling them that police are bad, by their friends telling them that police are bad, or by society, the media, Hollywood? So it may not even be that she's had a run-in. It may be she may have no experience with officers whatsoever. This is the problem that society and the media create. They're taking these children who have no experience with law enforcement whatsoever, good, bad, or indifferent.
Being an educator, she's supposed to, you know, stay neutral, keep an open mind, and try and, just like a reporter, you, as a teacher, you have to report the facts to students, just like media. You're like media supposed to. And teachers are beholden
right.
to that. You're supposed to teach fact to children, to teach them how to move on in life and have certain skills. Now, for her to promote this in a negative light and stand by it.
Mm-hmm. That tells you a lot about her.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks a lot about her character, and ultimately she's on the flip side. She's a racist flip side. So
teachers, just like law enforcement, I just want to throw this out there. Teachers, just like law enforcement, have a great responsibility for the perception that they put out there. When teachers are teaching these impressionable children, they have a greater effect than, say, some person they see walking down the aisle at Walmart on society in general.
Well, see, now this
the same
is
with,
a different, it's gone a step further. Should this teacher be held accountable for what she's done? Absolutely. And she should be called on it. But here it's gone even a step further, because the educational system that she's involved in that area, they're backing her. They're allowing it to stay there. So they're just as bad as that educator. So
absolutely.
That tells me that the education process there in that area is warped.
Well, first thing I saw this morning, I woke up in a really bad mood this morning because I, in a news station playing in the background, and I woke up. I bleed crimson and cream. I'm a huge University of Oklahoma fan, huge. And the first thing I heard this morning whenever I woke up was that the University of Oklahoma has, the engineering program has put footprints out around their engineering building. And the way, of course, the media, the way that they said it was the walk of shame, or footprints of shame, leading these for, it was to shame, I don't know how to explain this, but so one of the footprints says, and it's in reference to white privilege, one of the footprints, they all have quotes on them, and one of the footprints says, it's not your fault you have privilege, but it's your problem if you deny it, or it's your fault if you deny it. And it's in reference to white privilege. There's another one. All of these quotes were taken from a booklet about diversity. Another one said something about, yes, she's a woman, and yes, she can be an engineer. Help her, or don't hinder her by telling her she can't, or something. I don't know. It's all based on, so the news put it out this way, that it was the walk of shame, and it was into shaming white people in, you know, into accepting diversity or something like that. What you're implying by placing these footprints, University of Oklahoma, is you're implying that we don't accept, as a whole, we don't accept diversity. I don't even know anybody who doesn't accept diversity. Who doesn't like having a diverse group of friends, a diverse group of students at Oklahoma University of Oklahoma? I don't understand where this is coming from, but your education system, it starts when they're children. You've got this high school now. You've had some elementary schools that we've had to deal with earlier this year with the same kind of like posters and stuff. Your school boards are backing them. Now you've got your universities doing the same. I just heard, I think it was a year ago now, I think I heard it on the news yesterday, but it's been a year since the University of Missouri, is that right, did their, oh my God, they did their own form of segregation, like free zones, safe zones for different races or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you're
thinking. That college, whichever one it was, I want to say it was Missouri, but I don't think that's right.
Missouri.
Yeah, I think it started with an M, but I don't know why Missouri is standing out to me. But the thing is,
I think it's in Michigan.
Okay, that might be right. They have lost $2 million in funding, in donations, this year, in the last year, as a direct result. And that's what, it was Bill O'Reilly that brought it up, because Bill O'Reilly had said what you can do to counter this stuff. And he's right. Hit him in the pocketbook.
Oh, yeah.
In that, they have lost $2 million in donations after that little stunt that they pulled. How can you hit a public school in the pocketbook? I don't know, but we've got to be vocal about this, because the education system, from the parents teaching their children the one side of the story, the way, you know, one outlook on things, and that's not based on facts at all, and then you've got, they're going to school and they're learning this, they're going to high school and they're getting this from their teachers, the school board's backing it, then you've got your TV shows and your media outlets. And then they go on to college, and they've got their colleges promoting these kind of things. It's pounded in these children's heads by the time that they are 21, 22, 25, and they are all of a sudden they're BLM activists, because they believe, they've had it pounded in their head that people just don't like them, or that we are oppressing them, or, you know, it starts out when they're young, and it's just being pounded. These are just so many incidences where these things are being pounded into children's heads from the time that they're born to the time that they are young adults.
Exactly. And for Oklahoma to sit there, you know, a major university to sit there and say that Oklahoma, you know, is not diverse, they forget their history. I mean, if they look back, you know, this is before Oklahoma became a state. You had the great land rush of Oklahoma, and you had all ethnicities fighting to get land. All they had to do was, when they had heard the sound of the gun back in the, you know, the land rush, all different races, and I mean all different colors, creeds, this, that, from all over the world were here to get a piece of the American dream and get a piece of land to stake and raise, you know, their families, raise crops, do whatever. And all they had to do was plant a stake in the ground and claim that land. And it was a diverse group of people. And don't tell me Oklahoma does not have diversity. We are Oklahoma is probably one of the most diverse states that I can think of.
So not to focus on just this little footprint thing that they have going on. But I remember it was just a couple of months ago. I have a horrible memory, but I remember OU came out, it was something else, another liberal policy that they were so proud of, and it was another big news story that the University of Oklahoma was promoting, and they were really proud of it, whatever it was a very liberal policy, whatever it was. And when I heard that this morning, I'm like, again, you know, what is, why they're like proud of their progressiveness. That's a word that just people don't understand. But they're going out of their way to me to brag about their liberal teachings. At least they're open and public about it. But I mean, because you do have lots of colleges that teach things that'll just blow your mind. But I don't know. It's indicative of the society that our children are coming up in. It's very indicative. The whole thing is, all of this that we're looking at today, it's really bad. And we do have another story I want to touch on really quick, and it has nothing to do with anything like this. We're going to get back on the police side of stories and media, because that's what we do. There was the woman who was shoplifting. The video surfaced yesterday, the body cam. And
Florida.
David, do you know what I'm talking about?
It took place in Florida. She was caught shopping, and she had shoes in her possession that she had shoplifted. And ultimately, after she walked out of the store with them, she was presented with the fact that they caught her. She admitted, even through the whole thing, if you watch all the footage in this, admitted to the theft. She admitted to her wrongdoing the entire time. And the officer, really went out of his way. You're commanded to do something 7, 8, 10 times, and you don't follow instructions, you're going to be taken down. You're resisting. And that's exactly what she resisted the entire time. And it's clear that she did. And that the media wants to spin this. They didn't even watch their own footage closely. come on. All this poor little 100-pound girl. Well, you know what? This little 100-pound girl, or whatever she was, she didn't comply to the direction of the police officer when given opportunity to do so 10 times. What is the police officer supposed to do? Offer you a lunch at McDonald's until you decide to comply? Hell no. Get on the ground. And if you're not going to get on the ground and get in, or assume the position you're told and instructed to do, you'll be put in that position. And that's exactly what happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
You're right.
They said she had to have stitches in her head. And I saw this video before it was posted in the group.
That was her own
fault. I was kind of scrolling. Yeah, absolutely. And I was scrolling through it. I didn't really pay much attention to it. I was really busy at the time, but I saw it, and this, wherever I had seen it, it said, woman ends up bloody, bloody, bloody. They're all focusing on this blood. And listen, let's be realistic here. Anytime you get a head wound, it doesn't matter how small it is. You cut your finger and it like never stops bleeding. And you feel like you lose a gallon of blood just from a paper cut, just from any kind of cut on your finger. A head wound is the same way. This seemed like blood to people.
Yeah, it'll bleed worse than a gunshot wound.
But listen, even whenever she's on the ground, she keeps laying on her back. This woman, I don't know what in the crap she was on, but I would swear that she was on something. Even when she's laying on her back and the officer tells her, repeatedly, roll over, on your stomach. And then he gets her on her stomach, finally, and he grabs her arm, and she's still twisting away from him. What do you expect to happen, lady?
She did.
Let's talk about the article itself. The article, this is by the New York Daily News. They put this whole article in her perspective and her claim that she was choked and slammed down. It was excessive force. That they kept saying he pointed a weapon at her. It was a taser, and he warned her that he would tase her because she was resisting so much. When he was grabbing at her, there were two people actually grabbing her. I believe it was an employee. They were in a blue dress shirt.
From the actual place of business.
Yeah. Then they put up her selfie from Facebook in the article of her looking innocent.
To make her look sweet and innocent, right.
Yes, and then she claimed that he had a hold of her, and he could have just put her in handcuffs. But she, if you watch the video, she's twisting and twisting and twisting. She's refusing to be arrested because she wants to offer to pay for the shoes so that she doesn't get arrested. So that's why she keeps resisting, she's like, but can't I just pay for them? Can't I just pay for them? And she's fighting them and fighting.
That in the beginning, and if she would have complied from the beginning, I'm sure that the department store that she stole from, 9 times out of 10, they'll consider immediate restitution right there and then. They'll tell you, pay for the articles, but you are never to return to this store as long as you live. You're no longer welcome here. A lot of places will do that, and then the officer can walk off, as long as they say, well, we've handled it then internally. Thank you for your assistance. But the minute she resisted, it changed the whole scope of things. Now he's committed, you're committed, You've got to follow through, and that's exactly what she did. I mean, she committed herself to breaking the law even further, and she suffered the ultimate price with her freedom. She had to be arrested.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think it said that she was charged with resisting arrest.
Absolutely. The officer even states in the video footage, you know, when he was trying to handcuff her the first time, and he told her, you know, with her pleas of, well, I'll pay for it, I'll pay. He says, it's too late now. He says, you're resisting arrest. He says, I can't let it go. You've taken it to a whole different level, lady. And he explained it right there in that video footage. So she knew right then and there what was going to happen. She had the ability to discuss this stuff, you know, in an adult manner before that. All she had to do was comply. And she refused to do so. She was ready to fight to get away, period. If she would have had the ability to run away, if she wasn't surrounded, she probably would have. Yeah, is that speculation? Absolutely. But here it is again. She still resisted.
She was trying very hard.
Once you're placed under arrest, you know, if you resist, that charge gets put on you automatically. Boom, that's a done deal. I don't care if the rest of the charges are dropped. That one will stick.
But, you know, like what Tammy's saying, the way the article was written was completely like, here we go again with the cops or the bad guys. You know, look at this pretty girl on Facebook. You know, she wouldn't do something like that. And you watch the video, and her behavior is so off the chart resisting, off the chart just
adamant.
He
warned her
about
taking her down.
So
they
didn't take a good look at how she looked in that video. She looks nothing like her Facebook picture. And if you're going to sit there and promote, she's just a God-fearing, she's a good person. She never does. She pets doggies and feeds them biscuits every day. Well, you know what? So did this doctor in New York. But you know what? She turned around and said, I'm a god. I'm the hero. I save lives. These cops are nothing but a pain in the ass and don't do their damn job anyway, and they're going to harass me over a ticket. And she got the boot in her ass. She ain't no damn hero. She's
no.
far from it.
Yeah, the God complex thing, it blows my mind. She shouldn't even have a job. It blows my mind.
After seeing that, if she were my doctor, she wouldn't be after that. That's for sure.
No. No, and that's another good way to hit him in the pocketbook. If you can, if that is your doctor, that is your surgeon, whatever she was, hit him in the pocketbook. You do have choices in America.
That's like our criminal justice system has realized. And, you know, and it has felt, you know, people that have fallen victim to certain crimes. Well, why did he walk away, officer? You arrested him. You had all the evidence. Why did he just get a fine? Well, we found out that, you know, the justice system, we can lock them up. Do they learn anything? Absolutely not. They just learn how to break the law again. They learn how to do things, you know, in a more sneaky way. The best way to hit them is where they live, in their wallet. Take what means the most to them. So the judge says, okay, well, you got a $10,000 fine. I'm going to take your house. I'm going to take your car. I'm going to take this and that away from you. Because ultimately, that's all they understand is the dollar value. So, all right, hit them in the wallet. Hit them in the pocketbook. It's a shame it has to be that way, but hey, if it works, it works.
Yeah. Listen, my Facebook's blown up, and we're in overtime, so I'm going to cut off and say thank you guys for calling in. I've got stuff I got to take care of, a lot of stuff. So I'll let you guys go. Thank you guys for calling in.
We
did have really good dialogue today. I think things went really well. All credit goes to Tammy for setting this up for me and giving me an agenda, because I wasn't sure exactly what we were going to do, but she's awesome like that. And I will talk to you guys later.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you, guys. Bye, everybody.
Bye.